Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the comfort and support with a new mattress from Serta. Find the perfect mattress for a deep and restorative night's sleep. Take control of your sleep and save big money on Serta mattresses now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Previously.tv Podcast Network.
What the hell is going on here, Molly?
Probably nothing.
Set a mouthful.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 29, The Real McCoy. And now are your hosts, the Exist, Tara Ariano and Sarah Budding.
What?
That's what I said. No. Now are your
You're
hosts.
You're not wrong.
I didn't even hear
we
that.
We are.
Hi.
David!
Hello. So, Tara.
Yeah.
When it comes to worst episodes of 90210 to date, mm-hmm. all time.
Yep.
How would you feel that The Real McCoy compares with the Christmas episode?
This is bad. It's definitely bad. I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not. But the Chris, at least it has, like, it doesn't stay on this the entire, on the dumb Old West past life regression. It doesn't stay on that the whole time. Whereas the Christmas one, it's like, it's inescapable. All of the business with the angels and stuff, it's so stupid. So I would say the Christmas one is worse. What do you think?
Well, I think... It depends on which bad axis or baxis, if you will.
I will.
You won't. That you're talking about. But I think this one is much more aggressively boring. Like, I agree with you. I think it's probably slightly less bad. But mm-hmm. at least that one is, like, kind of shockingly, entertainingly so bad it's good and then bad again bad.
Yeah.
This is just very dull. Even when you're taking a break from... whatever those accents are, mm-hmm. then the other storylines are no relief. You're just fighting to stay awake. So
true. I mean, a case could be made for either. This isn't a hill I'm going to die on, obviously. Like the argument for The Real McCoy being worse is that, like, at least the Christmas one is just trying to be, like, cute. It thinks it's being lighthearted and it's doing a very expected riff on It's a Wonderful Life. The Real McCoy, on the other hand, though, thinks it's doing something profound, and that makes it worse in that respect. Like, you know that Luke Perry was like, this is Miami Real, which is, you know, sad and terrible in a different way. So, you know, arguments could be made on both sides.
So am I
okay?
Correct?
Yes, Dave.
In assuming that this episode has something to do with Dylan McKay as a cowboy in the Old West?
Yes.
How come I've never heard of this episode before? This sounds amazing. This sounds like the best episode ever.
Well, Dave, as you know.
You will be amazed. That covers a lot of acreage. Yeah. Good and bad.
You know I don't watch the reruns past the Brenda years. So yes. I, while I'm sure I did watch this at the time, I knew it was a thing that was coming up, like, vaguely. I didn't remember hardly anything about the episode before I watched it.
So. I do enjoy coming into these commentaries blind, but mm-hmm. I also kind of wish I knew about this Western thing so that I could just have tons and tons of clips about the Old West to pepper in here. So that's my regret.
I mean, if you want to start watching these in preparation, you can.
We'll stop that conversation.
Okay. I did, however, show you one very important GIF, which we will get to in that when we get in. So let's just start this, Sarah, so we can stop.
Okay.
How many episodes have started that way?
Of
them.
I just have one request.
Yes, Dave.
When you introduce each, you know, plot number or plot, you know, A plot, B plot.
There's only two.
Okay. You have to say partner after.
Okay. Sarah, are you ready?
Yes. No.
Let's start with our B plot. Partner.
Thank you.
Claire and David keep their horrible secret secret. This is brief. After musing to Donna that she doesn't know how long Kelly and Brandon are going to last, Val, please aim higher. When everyone's at a cake party celebrating the end and or beginning of Brandon's presidential term, which we will get to, Val practically dislocates a hip going after him, but David and Claire block her path and bust her in clip number two.
Getting a little overt, aren't we, Valerie?
Boy, Val, you're losing your touch, at least with Ray and Donnie. You snuck around. You were a little more subtle.
Is that what you told her I did?
No, I just told her to watch her back.
Always a pleasure, guys.
I mean, they're kind of both right. Like, it's just, it's Brandon. Like, is he worth outing yourself as having a crush on him? Really? No.
Yeah, and just one of many instances in which it's inconceivable that Valerie might be preferable to Saint Cat Butt Mouth. So, yeah, all of you shut up.
Yeah. One or possibly many days later, who cares? Donna comes into Claire's room to invite her and David to come out for sushi and bowling, and both are very excited until Ray leans into the doorway because he is part of the deal, unfortunately for them. Donna brags on his bowling skills until, on the fly, Claire, pretty convincingly for a character on television, invents a party that she and David forgot about but have to leave for immediately. Donna wants to try to get together with them afterward and won't take breathless refusals for an answer. And Ray tries to help them get out of the escape hatch when the doorbell rings, and when Donna goes to get it after telling them she's so disappointed, when she's gone, Ray shows off his street smarts in clip number three.
This Betsy chick, she's not really having a party, is she?
Couldn't tell you. I don't really know anyone by the name of Betsy.
How's Valerie doing, Ray?
I wouldn't know, Claire.
Good. Keep it that way.
Ooh, the bass guitar is not having it. I'll just say Claire is about 1,000 times more threatening here than David was in his little chat with Ray last week.
Yeah, well, her voice is about an octave deeper, for starters.
Yes, but also, the fact that these people spend literally all of their time together and Donna wasn't like, who the hell is Betsy? It's kind of preposterous. Like, the fact that you never see any of their other friends ever is one of the problems with this lie, but whatever. I guess it worked. The end.
This is one of the few times that they don't, like, totally undercut whatever's going on in the scene with stuff mugging.
Yes.
That's designed to make sure that we know that Betsy doesn't exist. Like, mm-hmm. This was actually pretty well played by them. But then the resulting, like, there is no Betsy, is there, goes on for a week. Just push Donna down the stairs and leave the show, please. No one cares anymore.
I had forgotten how much more of Ray there actually is. You know he comes back in season six, right? The push down the stairs is not next time.
I know.
Oh, God. Anyway, before we move on to our A-plot, partner, we have a Dave word.
I'm
Try
in my
it again.
Head.
You can do it. You can do it.
Pacific.
No.
I'm doing that on purpose.
No, he's not.
No, I'm in my own head.
Do it, Dave.
Sapif.
Spiam Leelson.
The Dave word is pific.
Particular. Special.
Do you want me to just say it, Dave, or do you give up?
I give up.
Specific is what that was supposed to be.
It's my Achilles heel word. I always want to say pacific.
I know you do.
Or spasiba.
Well, now that that's behind us,
look.
Cough.
Well, yes? We've learned two things today. Uh-huh. One, I can't say that word. Right. Two, my dignity only costs $20.
A bargain at any price, ladies and germs. Please.
Moving on to our
website.
A story partner.
God. Yeah.
While Brandon runs his dumb campaign, Dylan goes back to the future part three. There's really no way to untangle these two things. I tried. So let's just do this. God. Brandon and his dumb suit are trying to wrap up a student senate meeting when Alex gets up with a motion. He exposits that it's the last meeting that Brandon will be running this semester, and then Alex and Janice both wanted to do something to mark the end of the Brandon years, which I thought was going to be immolate themselves, but no. There's actually a proclamation and a cake, which Steve and Kelly wheel in, and all of the gang, plus his parents, also enter. Also, before we play this,
thereby Andrea, doubling the population in the room. P.S. The student senate is like four people.
Seriously. But Andrea is among the revelers that comes in, and you can see this in the visual aids at previously.tv. She has like the worst not combed through curl ever. It's like a loop de loop. It looks like part of like a Hot Wheels track in her hair. Please go.
It does. And that continues for the next two episodes. But then, I mean, we did see her again, but you know,
we did. Anyway,
let's get through it.
Closer. Anyway, let's get on with this. This is what happens. Clip number four.
Whereas Brandon Walsh was never officially elected president of California University and survived a constitutional challenge to his presidency to become an effective leader and dedicated advocate for student rights, we, the elected representatives of the Student Senate, by unanimous consent, would like to thank him for a job well done, as well as urge him to run for another term as president of California University.
Hear, hear! Wow, thank you. This is totally unexpected and totally bogus. Thank you all for being here. It's been an incredible year. Started out kind of rocky, but somehow we managed to get through it, didn't we?
He's got a lot of poise.
And
very impressive.
After this meeting, I'm afraid I'm going to have to head right over to the university hospital to get my head examined, because who else but someone with extreme masochistic tendencies would announce that he's willing to give this another shot if you guys are.
Way to go, Bran.
So I don't really know what else to say except let him eat cake. Kelly, would you do the honors?
Don't mind me. I'm just the little woman behind the man.
Like Lorena.
The past. I don't know why I let it go on that long. That Lorena joke was really not worth it.
Well, but... and also the clapping parts are like 15 seconds each.
Yeah.
No one cares. No one cares.
Yeah.
And the little woman behind the man. Shut up.
Also,
all of you shut up.
The idea that Brandon would ever like consider not running again, this fucking egomaniac, as if like what else does he have going on? We never see him in class. I don't think we even know what his major is supposed to be. I mean, I guess it's supposed to be political science, but still, this is his whole identity. And obviously this tin pot dictator isn't going to give up his chance to run shit, especially since, as we are about to find out, he's basically running unopposed anyway. After the meeting in the good old student union at the cake party, David offers over coffee to do whatever Brandon needs him to do to help with his campaign. But Brandon doesn't plan to run a very elaborate one because, as I said, he's practically running unopposed. Val says she loves it when he talks political science as if that's wonky, like unopposed. Okay. And Claire makes such a hilariously grossed out face that I had to get it for the visual aids. Anyway, Donna warns As Val starts to flirt with Brandon harder, Donna asks her to go and get Kelly, and off to the side, then there's some blah blah about Jim's job and a meeting the partners had without him, which was going to be a thing in the next episode. We'll get to it. Brandon tells Jesse and Andrea how glad everyone is that they're not moving to Boise. Jesse says he's fielding offers back east, but thinks they'll probably stay in L.A. Brandon also has welcome news for Andrea and all of us in clip number five.
You know, I talked to an old friend of yours today on the internet.
Really? Who?
Jordan Bonner.
No way. You're kidding.
Was it an old flame or?
More like a flicker.
So he tells me today that he is now the editor of the Yale Daily News.
Ah, fellow homeboy.
You know, I always forget that you were a Yalie.
Yep. Did 4 years in New Haven. Lived to tell about it, too.
Anyway, Jordan says that he's still kicking himself for being too sick to take you to the prom, but he's never forgiven you for not going to school back there.
Well, next time you talk to him, you tell him to get over it, because I am.
I haven't, Jordan.
Me neither.
Even though obviously he doesn't appear in this episode and I'm pretty sure we never see him again. Still, even having him discussed on camera is so nice.
It really is. Yeah. Well.
Also, I was talking to him on the internet. Adorable. And also, her face lights up so much when Brandon brings up Jordan. It's adorable and also sad because she's with Jesse. Third, shut up, Jesse.
Yeah.
Steve also tells Brandon he wants to be his campaign manager. And over on another part of the party, Claire and David's shade, which we heard earlier, hasn't stopped Val from opening hostilities with Kelly in clip number 6.
So, what time is your flight tonight?
We're taking the red eye.
Well, don't worry. I'll take good care of your guy while you're gone.
Is that your way of telling me you're going to make a move on Brandon?
I'm talking about Dylan. He's the one you dream about, isn't he?
Ooh.
I mean, not that I have any problem with this kind of shade being thrown at Kelly. Mm-hmm. Like, do your best, tiny mouth, but you're never really going to win that rap battle.
Yeah.
But it's really just a shame that Val, every time, like, has to be character, not even assassinated, Manchurian candidated, to make these things happen just so that we can get dragged into the, like, you know, positioned for the I choose me moment, which mm-hmm. is like, you know, whatever. Also, who is siding with Kelly? Like, right. Were there viewers who were like, Team Kelly, Val's the worst? No.
Probably. Sadly. You know,
I guess
she is blonde. She had been around longer. She's supposedly not scheming as the show wants us to think Val is. And I don't know. She was in a cult. Who knows? Whatever. When we next see Val, her boobs are putting together a very nice picnic basket, which she brings over to Dylan's as she had threatened. And when she's standing at the door talking to Charlie, we see that Jason Priestley directed this episode. So keep that in mind. Charlie wants to take the picnic to the park with her, but Val is obviously not there for him, and Charlie is evasive about what's happening and why she can't go inside, but Val figures out that Dylan is with the hypnotist in there. And here we go again. When Molly tells Dylan to look down, he's wearing cowboy boots with spurs and hearing guns and all kinds of other Old West bullshit sound effects like Dave tried to hunt up earlier. And in sepia that resolves into color, Dylan is robbing a stagecoach and being identified by his victim as Billy McCoy. And a blonde hiding behind her hair, who we're not supposed to be able to tell is Jenny Garth, is cowering on some dude's lap, who, by the way, we never see the guy. But she's whimpering, so Billy reassures her in clip number 7.
You got nothing to be afraid of, sugar. I would never harm a hair on the head of anything as fetching and sweet-smelling as yourself.
Gross. I don't know why that's supposed to make us like him. It does not.
Ugh. Yeah, no. And if it's supposed to, like, sell him or position him convincingly as, like, a sort of skeevy badass, that's also a failure. Because, once again, they've piled, like, 16 holsters and 6 guns on someone with a 19-inch waist. It just does not work, of it.
No. All of this, like, he's not a bad guy, he's a gentleman robber. Like, oh, so you will definitely rape me, or don't know? I mean, whatever. Obviously that wasn't gonna happen, but still, it's like hard not to think about, especially since, well, whatever. So Billy's accomplice Zeke fires a warning shot and yells at Billy for dicking around, tells him to cover him, and Billy does, but not before staring at Old West Kelly for long enough to let us know that she has the sexiest eyes and one hand he's ever seen, I guess. One of the drivers tries to draw on Billy, but he shoots him in the hand first, and then he and Zeke take off, and fake Kelly watches them go, and then clip 8.
So begins the legend. The legend of Billy McCoy. The runaway, fresh off the farm from Cody County. Kid with a quick draw, quick temper, and an understanding that someday he'll probably die with a bullet in his back.
Hope it's today.
My notes, why is this happening to me? I still don't know. Billy and Zeke go into a saloon. Billy takes a slug of his whiskey or whatever and gazes at the singer, who is one of Rachel's Long Island friends from Friends, the one with the curly hair and the dumb laugh. Anyway, here she is, horny for Billy. One of the guys in the bar who's playing cards, this is the gift that I showed you, Dave, yep. Looks from Billy to the sketch of Billy on his wanted poster and then back at Billy and has the most hilariously overwrought, bug-eyed reaction I have maybe ever seen.
And it, like Vizelis Shannon's eye roll from a previous episode,
yeah.
It just keeps going. And it keeps getting better the longer it goes on, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. It's not good. I mean, the only reason that it's as short as it is because they have to cut back to Luke Perry in the middle of it because it goes on that long. Anyway, Billy watches himself get recognized and he and this dude both show each other they're getting ready to shoot. But they apparently didn't have the budget for special effects or squibs, because that's when we cut back to Dylan in his living room saying that it's a bloody mess. And when we return to the saloon, the shootout is over and Billy is bleeding. Zeke gets him out and they ride off. Molly, in the present, notes that Dylan is smiling, and Dylan says it's not every day you get to reinvent yourself. Barf. In a different saloon at night, Billy and Zeke stroll through acting like they're hot shit. We find out the singer's name is Dixie. Then we have to see them in bed.
Of course it is.
Yeah, seriously. Then we have to see them in bed where she is overacting on every level, as you can hear in, so you can see in GIFs at previously.tv and here in clip number 9.
I sing for them, but save it for you.
Hell, save it for someone else.
You're the only one who matters, Billy. You're the real McCoy.
And here's where I started just like theorizing about why the only people in the flash, the only present day person in the flashback is Kelly, because the actual flashbacks are so boring. So I was just like, well, how come, like, did they all just read the script and they're like, I refuse to play along with this fifth season, like, negotiating point for someone else's contract? Like,
right.
No, I'm staying home that day.
Yeah. Hmm. True, because everyone did show up for all of Luke Perry's coma dreams, including Tori Spelling in a rubber dress.
Whoa, thanks for bringing that up.
Sorry, not sorry. But then Billy looks down at the street where fake Kelly is doing errands on the thoroughfare. And this seems to be the first time that Dylan is putting it together that it was her in the stagecoach, too, because I guess that was some hand and hair hiding. Molly tells Dylan to hold on to the image and breathe through it as if it would be upsetting for him to see that Kelly is there. I don't get what his emotional reaction is supposed to be, but whatever. And then we have to watch Brandon act wearily put upon that Nat wants to put up posters in the Peach Pit. A dumb idea the first time, a dumb idea now. He says he's not going to have posters, but he has already promised Val that he'd have the hypothetical victory party at the Peach Pit after dark. And we learn that Nat is still in love with Brandon in clip 10.
You know something, Brando? I hate it when you're humble.
That never happens, so it works out good for you. Go give someone some free French fries and stay out of the
Here's a free slice of humble pie.
Nice. So then Charlie and Val have also ended up at the Peach Pit, where he tells her what Molly's hypnosis is like. She takes you back in time and the past comes alive in your head. It still seems out there to Val. And Charlie says that even if it's all BS, when you're in it, it's the real deal. So let's get back to it. Sigh. Molly's trying to get Billy to focus. In the Old West, Billy is letting henchmen do the real bank robbing while he lazily sits in a chair for which one of the bank clients totally drags him in clip 11.
You traveling with an army now, McCoy? Can't pull all those big jobs by yourself anymore? Will that rock gut finally get to you?
Who in the hell are you?
You don't recognize me? Well, maybe you recognize this.
I do that. Maybe this time I'll put you out of your misery.
Without those guns, you ain't half a man.
Keep talking. It's your funeral, squarehead.
He ain't worth the kid. He ain't worth the blood. He ain't worth the effort.
Square head. Hate everything.
But the sideburn, the clerk has sideburns that are like faker than fake sideburns that you would get for like a child's Halloween costume. They look like two shoe brushes on his cheeks. You can see them in the visual aids. They're about to go.
There's also a picture over the desks in the back area of the bank, and the like whatever a former bank president slash cousin of President Chester Arthur, whatever the fuck, looks just hilariously. Someone clearly painted it that morning, and it looks like President Beaker of the Wells Fargo Wichita branch. He just is just like, he looks kind of drunk. It's good. You can see it in the visual aids.
Billy and Zeke are about to go, but then the clerk tries to be a hero and gets shot by Billy instead. But the guy Billy shot in the hand still isn't done in clip 12.
Right. Pay him no mind. He was only a family man with little children. He ain't worth nothing. Just another notch on the belt of the legendary Billy McCoy.
Get it, five and under.
Later, Billy drinks and waves off Dixie's efforts to cheer him up. He is remorseful because he knows he didn't have to shoot that guy. Dixie wants him to stay with her, but he's the strong, silent type and drunkenly staggers out without answering. And outside, one of Billy's henchmen tries to impress Billy by shooting at a Native American's feet to make him dance. Since Billy does not seem impressed, the victim seems to be silently appealing to his humanity to make this stop.
And I believe this guy we did see before.
Oh, really?
I think this is the tribal police guy that makes him and Brandon do the sweat lodge.
Oh, okay.
Poor guy.
It was dark. Sorry. I'm sure you're right. In reality, Dylan looks stricken as Molly asks him to describe what he's seeing, and he flashes back to the sweat lodge on the reservation. We cut back and forth from that to Billy on the street, in the Western town, finally drawing on his own guys and telling them that's enough in clip 13.
I said it's enough.
Ooh.
You do this for an Indian?
I'd do it for a man.
Did you ever think it'd come to this?
I hoped it wouldn't, but...
I know. Oh, good.
Sigh. When they have gone, Billy asks the victim if he speaks any English, and the guy doesn't answer. But as Billy is helping him up, three other white dudes appear to lead him off. Like, if I was this guy, I'm not totally sure I'd trust them to be any more enlightened. But whatever, Billy's intervention is enough to impress Old West Kelly. Her indeterminate southern accent is not good in clip 14.
That would have killed him if you hadn't come along.
Yeah, there's been enough killing.
A sentiment I hold dear, but wouldn't have expected to hear from an outlaw.
Hey, I've seen you before. Yeah, you were on that stage from Abilene. Had your head buried in your mama's lap.
That was a long time ago.
You can always depend on the kindness of strangers.
Yes, it was. You think a person could change?
With all my heart.
You think I could change?
I pray that you
can. Who cares?
Otherwise, it would be a tragic waste of a life to spend your time on this earth in a haze of alcohol and gunpowder.
It's not that bad.
And as he looked in her soft blue eyes, he knew right then and there that his days as an outlaw were over. And that the next phase of his life was about to begin. There were lots of lazy picnics by the pond that summer, where she would read to him from the scriptures and fill his heart with hope and eventually love.
It sucks.
It's weird. I just filled this waxed paper bag with barf.
That's so funny because in my notes, in all caps, they've filled my heart with barf is what I wrote. Same page. So not everyone is on board, it turns out, with the new kinder, gentler Billy. And when he goes back to the saloon, his guys basically all think he's a pussy now. They had plans to rob a train together and they're pissed that Billy is blowing them off. Billy claims that the timing isn't right, but no one's buying it. So he has to tell them he's still in, though not that enthusiastically, and then narrates that Dixie knew his heart wasn't in robbery anymore. And the next day when the guys all saddle up, Billy is fucked off with Old West Kelly on their way to a new life together up north. And then at Dylan's house, Molly is gone and Charlie's at the door with Val. Dylan gives a huge eye roll while his back is turned to Val, while she lives down to his expectations by being shitty about his his hypnosis. I made a gif of this, of the eye roll, which I'm proud of him and me. Anyway, he way overreacts to Val's mild roasting of him in clip 15.
Look, you want to know what happened? You really want to know what happened? I found out something. I found out I was going straight to hell till Kelly Taylor came into the picture, okay?
So you and Kelly have, like, a seminal link?
Molly says it's as strong as anything she's ever channeled.
Oh, far out.
What does a seminal link mean?
It means that Dylan and Kelly are soulmates for life.
Stop saying seminal link. It's going to keep coming up, but it's really not okay.
No, it's really
that link is just like too specific.
Jizzific, you mean?
No.
Sorry.
No, you're not.
Sorry.
After.
Oh, fine. I deserve that.
Okay.
Oh boy.
Oh God. All right.
Guys.
Welcome to the Morning Zoo 902 podcast. How about those photos and congrats? All right, let's go.
So then, after Jim gives Cindy an update on his career, which is actually no update, Brandon comes home and says that the Condor has endorsed his candidacy, which is a big deal and a switch from last time. Jim mopes that after he gets fired, Brandon might be able to get him a job teaching at the business school. This is after Brandon has left the room. LOL. Also, those who can't, etc. Jim, nice try, though. Upstairs, Brandon sniffs around in the hall and knocks on Val's door, and she tosses her joint out the window and calls him in. Once he is confirmed that she's okay, whatever that means, without sounding terribly interested about it, he starts to go. But she calls him back to ask if he thinks he has a soulmate and if Kelly is it. Brandon says he's not planning to marry her anytime soon. He sees a future with her, and Val slides into pathetic in clip 16.
Why can't they all be like you?
All who?
The guys I know.
Like Charlie the screenwriter? Yeah, I saw you two at the Peach Pit today.
And you didn't say hello. I'm insulted.
Well, you seemed very verbally entangled.
And I'm sure Kelly told you to keep your distance, right?
She may have mentioned something.
Let's face it. Kelly's not going to be satisfied until she has the whole clique against me. And you know why, right? When I moved here, before I knew you guys were together, I confided in her and told her that by the end of the year, my goal was to have you look at me and not think of your sister.
Well, I think we're way past that point, Val.
Except for my first night in Beverly Hills, when we were talking in the bathroom. Do you realize that we've never touched each other? Not even once.
Sure we have. Haven't we?
We've never even grazed an elbow or slapped a high five or put a head on each other's shoulder.
So you have a burning desire to put your head on my shoulder.
I just hope Kelly appreciates what she has.
So do I.
What?
Exactly.
Did an episode get dropped somewhere? Seriously, like my notes are just like dot, 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 question mark.
Yeah.
Also, you don't want his head on your shoulder or anything else that you're not planning to dry clean. Okay.
Also, the Brandon's reaction is like, yeah, I hope I also hope Kelly appreciates how great I am. Like, I mean, of course he would say that, but also, why would he say that? It's so bad.
Yeah, what?
Anyway, as the music swells, he makes this big show of offering Val a hug, like, what a prize. Fuck off, both of you. Not so much Val, but Brandon. Jesus Christ. So then Steve and Kelly have gone to New York City for the sake of Kelly's modeling career. LOL. I remember he's her her manager. Dylan calls her at her hotel and she says that she knew he was going to call her today. She's been thinking about him. Something about New York reminds her of him. She says, like, what, all the surfers or just people reading anyway? They bounce back and forth tiresomely about signs and deja vu, and before he can get to his issue, she has to go to some schmooze party. He urgently tells her to call him when she gets back, no matter what time it is. Easy for him to say 3 hours earlier, and she briskly says she will in a way that lets us know she definitely won't, and hangs up with saying goodbye without saying goodbye because it's TV. And at school the next day, Brandon is very cocky about his chances in the election, but as he heads off for a live interview with Walter Chen, Cindy confesses some concern to Andrea in clip 17.
Do you really think he has this election in the bag? For Brandon to lose, it would take a twist of cataclysmic proportion.
Well, it is the year for that to happen, I guess. Anyway, cue twist. As Claire mics Brandon, she quietly warns him to be careful because something major is going on, and we find out that Walter got a fax from Sacramento and he's been in a tiz ever since. Okay, credit where it's due. Walter's show is called See You Later, which is good.
He's also wearing some, what is he wearing? He's wearing like a peach shirt, pale green pants, black socks, and brown shoes. It will be in the visual aids. Proceed with caution.
He's very amiable introducing Brandon because fucking duh, he's about to ambush him with the news that undergrad tuition is about to go up by 15% next semester. Brandon does his obnoxious laugh, but if he actually comes up with anything to say about it, we don't see it because the next scene we see is Brandon with Dean Whitmore hissing about it. It was supposed to be a worst case scenario, the tuition hike. Everyone got screwed over by this, but the legislature is determined to reduce the size of government, so everyone will have to learn to tighten their belts. Brandon is ridiculous in clip 18.
The election is tomorrow.
Brandon, no one in their right mind would hold you accountable for these tuition increases.
Well, wow.
Excuse me.
I don't know if university students are in their right minds or not, but the next
I'm allergic to issues that are put on student council. That would never go anywhere near the student council. You know what the university administration thinks of student council and tuition hikes? They are two separate universes.
Well, yes. I mean,
never do they meet. They can whine about it, but they have absolutely zero say in the matter.
Especially a state school. Like, that's the whole thing. It's determined by forces outside you, like, whatever. Still, cut to Alex Diaz speeching in the student union about the Board of Trustees, while off to the side, Janice holds Brandon responsible, at least in part, in clip 19.
Brandon, if you knew an increase was in the offing, you should have gone public. You should have raised hell.
I never thought they'd do it.
Well, they did it. And you blew it because emotions are running high, and the chances of any incumbent getting reelected at this point ain't great.
Especially with Alex running as a write-in candidate.
Is that official?
It is in our hearts.
Also, is that how write-in campaigns work? Like, isn't the whole point that they're unofficial? Whatever. Isn't the election tonight? Also, again, as Dave says, none of this would have anything to do with the student union. It's obviously outside any student's control, but whatever. Brandon thinks that Alex's candidacy is obvious based on his grandstanding. Janice still has plans to vote for Brandon. Lame Janice. This is his most chancellor's lackey move yet. Come on. But when she takes off, Val comes down the stairs and they have this exchange in clip 20.
So, have you heard any good tuition jokes lately?
Only the big one that's being played on me.
Yeah, this is all about you, you fucking dick. Jesus Christ.
God. You know who was totally celebrating, though? Dean Whitmore, who was like, I never have to deal with this sawed-off little fart knocker ever again. Woo!
Totally. Val says that at least Brandon will go out in style on the red carpet at the Peach Pit after dark and promises him a night to remember. She might even get him out on the dance floor, she says. He says if he wins, he'll dance, which is how you know he won't. She says she'll go stuff the ballot boxes then, and Brandon's like, you do that for me? She's like, in a New York minute, and his response is total sex eyes, but her reaction is like, I don't know if it's that Tiffany Amber Thiessen just isn't into Jason Priestley because she's like, bye, like just looks cute and chirpy rather than like she actually wants to fuck him. I made a GIF. You can see it in the visual aids and judge for yourself.
Also, the expression, as said by Tara, actually is stuff the ballot boxes. What they say on the show is stuff the ballots, which is not a thing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The ballot. No. You said it right.
No, I know, but I missed that they said it wrong. And then Kelly and Steve are returning to their hotel room after some other party. She lives in New York. There are a bunch of handwritten phone messages that have been slid under her door while she was gone because that's the past. She also has like a pink lady net scarf around her neck, so she looks like a boring girl gang member. But anyway, the messages are all from Dylan. Steve asks if she's got something going with Dylan again, but she says she doesn't know what's going on. But of course, we know what's going on, which is that he is boring us senseless. Specifically, he's at Molly's begging her to help him. He has to get back to the moment that he and Kelly headed off together. Molly doesn't get the urgency, but Dylan wants to know more about his seminal link with his soulmate. Stop saying seminal! Molly's concern is that she doesn't know what they're looking for, but neither does Dylan, apparently. But after the commercial, she's putting him back under again. It's still the West, but it's not the same. And we pan down from a church steeple to Billy with his kids. Okay, he's got a mustache.
It's even worse than the mustache from his, like, nightmare fantasies of which one he would marry, Kelly or Brenda.
Yes. Well, as I put in my notes, he looks like act one of a Lifetime original movie biopic of Sam Elliott. I'm sorry to besmirch your boyfriend, Sarah, but
Tara!
Like, it's that budget. Look, go to the visual aids and tell me I'm wrong.
You, madame. Oh.
Anyway, God. Molly asks if Kelly is with him, and he says that she is. Blah, blah, sermon, blah. The Mr. wants him to come up and preach some Sunday. And through some exposition about a dinner invitation, we find out that he's the town marshal. And before he can answer about accepting or not, he's looking over Kelly's shoulder at an outlaw riding up who stops and keeps his distance. And it's Zeke, who always could follow a trail, even when it got cold. Billy, who is now known as Jedediah, goes to talk to him. But before he does, Kelly orders him to get rid of Zeke. Billy will only tell her to take the kids home. Zeke wants to tell Billy that Dixie is about to get hanged. The only charge other than being born a, as they call it, half-breed, not okay, is sleeping with the wrong men and not giving them the deed to her saloon. Zeke thought they could count on Billy to help her. And it turns out they can, because as Kelly watches in passive-aggressive disapproval from the porch, Billy, back in his outlaw gear, gets his horse all ready to go. She claims she doesn't begrudge him doing what he can to right a wrong, but the people from his past don't know the man she loves. And they hug, and she makes him promise he'll be back, and he does. But the voiceover says they both knew that might be it for him, and back in whatever town, a dowdy-looking Dixie is led toward the gallows. I'm not going to go through every beat of this quote action unquote scene, but Zeke and Billy prevail. And when we next see her, Dixie's all dolled up again and buying a ticket to San Francisco. Dixie, no! He tries to give her money. She refuses for a second before accepting and heading for the train.
No opportunity left on the floor when it comes to San Francisco and Tara Ariano. Send your complaints to Tara at previously.tv. Thank you so much. I love San Francisco, guys.
You do not.
No, I don't. It's terrible.
She asks him to come see her. Of course, he will not agree. He just says goodbye. And as he's watching her walk off, some little scrub shoots him in the back and then yells at everyone around that Billy killed his daddy. So I guess this is Sideburns Jr. Was that your assumption, Sarah?
Sure. I think I slept through this part and wasn't really paying attention. It was like, I think he dies at the end. Could someone just get on with it already? And then I marveled at the terrible special effects that waited for the camera to pan over before his head started bleeding.
Oh, God, yes.
His head bleeding. He didn't get shot in the head.
Well, cut to the funeral, because he does die, and a very ostentatious glass-topped coffin for someone who's supposed to be a marshal and a church deacon, but whatever. Old West Kelly cries, and then we get the corpse eye view as all the important people in Billy's life take turns dropping flowers in his grave. And then after the Native American he saved from getting his feet shot at is followed by Brandon in 90s clothes, a.k.a. giant pants, and then Steve and Cindy, etc. Dylan demands of Molly to know what Brandon is doing at Billy's funeral. And then the last flower tosser is present day Kelly. Dylan is very disturbed and Molly's basically like, shrug. She tries to make him understand that time is elastic. So theoretically, there's not much difference between a regression and a premonition. Speaking of dying, Brandon's political career, the impeachment after dark party is hilariously dead. Alex has won the election. Brandon tries to look on the bright side, which is that he'll have to deal with the tuition hike, not Brandon. Kelly asks him to dance and he Brandons, but then crosses over to Val, who said she wanted him to win. He admits that he did too. Duh. At a table, Jim is still pouting about his job situation. He apparently almost quit today. Brandon comes over to offer them cannoli, but Cindy begs off, claiming that Jim has a headache. Andrea feels bad for Brandon, but Jesse's basically like, he can stand to eat shit every once in a while. Way to be right for once, Jesse. This is also where we find out he's been offered a teaching job at Yale Law School. Unlikely.
Has and he, only he accept- even graduated from law school himself?
No, as far as I know. Like, the school year isn't over.
So
at
what
this
is he
point.
Teaching? Receding hairline rates?
Bartending. He only accepted on the condition that Andrea's scholarship be reinstated. She looks deflated, like she's expecting to hear they turned him down. But they didn't. Yale is an option. She is happy. Nat gets the phone. It's Kelly for Brandon. And as David goes to get him, we get this clip 22.
Isn't it just like Kelly to call after the polls have closed? What's the difference? There is no difference.
Why are I don't get why Val is trying to, like, make all of Kelly's oldest friends turn against her. Like, that's not going to work. You need to make new friends.
Yeah. Or you should have been nicer to Claire and worked that angle, because yeah. that might actually work for you.
Seriously. At her house, Kelly baby voicily ends the call with Brandon begging off the party because she's tired from her trip, and she's on her way to bed when the doorbell rings and it's Dylan. She can tell he's got shit on his mind and looks slightly tentative about asking him what's up, but all he can say is that he's been thinking about her a lot, and then they start making out. The end.
Okay. And yet we're still supposed to be on her side.
Yeah.
Like, you not only is she cheating on Brandon, like, okay, fine, I know it's Brandon, but
sure.
that?
It's still wrong.
Yeah. And it's that. Like, even if you're not cheating on anyone, it's Dylan.
Yeah.
You hate each other.
Yeah.
Well, it's happening, so.
Yeah.
And it's going to be happening with rollerblades pretty soon, so let's just.
Oh my God. So true.
Try to get through it.
Who is this episode's MVP? Sarah.
President Diaz. Thank yes. you for finally bringing our long state school nightmare to a close, I guess. Not that anyone cared, but if we did, we'd be glad it was over. And I can't think of a more deserving jean jacket rolled at the sleeves president than you.
Indeed. I'm going to say Claire, who has an array of stink faces and is disgusted by everyone. And I feel her and I am her. That is my choice. Least valuable player. Molly, for making yes. this whole Old West reverie possible at all.
Yes, with an assist from Charlie, who introduced them. Bizzoo.
Yeah. Well, I have the Moo Moo Parker challenge here, but I don't know. Maybe we should do both the Kim challenge and the Moo Moo Parker challenge, because they're both kind of shitheads.
Sure.
Bad and dangerous to me.
Which do you want to do first, Sarah?
Let's do Dylan first.
All right. The Kim challenge. Five ways from this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know.
Partner. Well, robbing banks.
Yeah.
Fucking
vaguely,
Old West prostitutes. That'll yep. give you the clap.
Mm-hmm. Growing that mustache.
Yep. Being named Jedediah. Who's got time for that? No one.
Vaguely threatening women that he then goes on to marry. I'm calling rape culture on that one.
And accent cop pulling
yeah.
over that
well,
whole
that
family.
That makes six. All right. Five ways from this episode that Brandon might have ended up dead. I don't know, choked on his bile over the election.
Shoved into the old timey grave by someone else, also at Jedediah's funeral.
Gets diabetes from that cheap ass looking sheet cake from the grocery store.
Talking on the cordless to Kelly in New York, is hit by lightning and electrocuted.
Now and forever, drowned in his giant suit.
Oh, next time on Again With This, the senior Walshes choose Hong Kong, Andrea chooses New Haven, and Kelly wisely chooses herself over, say, Brayeridge or world travel with a stick insect. You'll choose death when it comes to our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other Again With This episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow our website on Twitter at previously TV and this very podcast at AWT 90210. I'm Fake McCoy, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm here with my co-host, Hayseed Tarariano. She's on Twitter at Tarariano. And where would we be without our producer and facts from Sacramento, David T. Cole? He's on Twitter at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeperoni.
Partner.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.